This is KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. Everyone needs a safe, decent, and stable place to live. And for some of the most vulnerable people in America, people suffering from mental illness and chronic health conditions, trauma, addiction, or just plain bad luck of circumstance, a simple transitional space gives them a chance to breathe and regroup. For the homeless, living on the street is not a choice as much as it is part of a crisis. A good idea has taken legs here in Jefferson County, namely the creation of a dozen transitional tiny houses or wooden tents, now occupied by some of the county's homeless population, a place where they can now have an address, a comfortable place to sleep, and doors they can lock behind them. The first efforts to construct these transitional units have become a village called Peter's Place, named after one of the catalysts of the original community build, Peter Bunyan. Since then, additional expertise and collaboration and linkage have evolved into a much bolder undertaking, with a new batch of home shelters being constructed as we speak. To find out more about this, more about the big picture, let's go inside the Compass. I'd like to introduce current key players in this next phase. Mike Schlechter is a case manager for Bayside Housing. Greer Gates is development director at Bayside. Judy Alexander is volunteer and coordinator. And Todd Armstrong, volunteer infrastructure coordinator, working with the city for permits and so on and so forth. And working closely with him is Dave Merrill, construction coordinator. And Debbie Steele, volunteer. So to begin with, I think, Judy Alexander, why don't you give us a recap? How did we end up where we are right now with the community build? How did this all happen? And where are we going with it?
We started building the first village where we're building right now along San Juan Avenue at 22nd Street. And we built five shelters there. And then we got permission to locate that village out in the county behind the Community United Methodist Church in Hadlock. So we finished the rest of the buildings out in Hadlock. We started that whole first project about mid-September last year, and that village opened in about mid-January of this year. And then we had a break of a few months. Most of us were pretty exhausted from that first village process, and we got started again in about April of this year with the intent of building a village in the city limits. So we moved this tent that we had been given to build under in Hadlock back to that same site along San Juan at the Evangelical Bible Church. And since the middle of April, we've built 9 shelters on that site. And 1 shelter was built at Rosemond Co-Housing Community. And we're currently working on the kitchen unit for the second village.
Todd, tell us where you're at right now and what's been your evolution briefly.
I'm a retired contractor, general contractor, still living in Seattle, intending to move to Port Townsend. The first day of build on the original village, I was on the peninsula, immediately was smitten by what they were doing. Didn't really know until later how remarkable it was, because they just started to build housing for homeless people. Because in the community, they were clear they couldn't avoid doing something. They just had to start something. They just started to build and figured out the details. So we're still in that process in so many ways. Now we're in the city of Port Townsend, so I'm doing infrastructure and, as a result, developing relationships with the city agencies and, you know, all of the people involved in Port Townsend. And it leans toward affordable housing conversations, because part of it is just zoning and a lot of the issues that are ongoing in the community that are important to take on. That's part of what we're doing, is looking at affordable housing as a real challenge worth taking on.
And then, Debbie, what's your history with the community build?
My husband made a video about Peter's Place. I was so impressed and excited by what I saw that when they started Pat's Place, which is what our new place is called, I decided I would volunteer to paint. And I got more paint on me in the ground than I did on the shelter. That I said to Judy, Judy, is there something else I could do? Could I maybe be volunteer coordinator? She said, I would love you to do that. So from that day forward, I've been volunteer coordinator.
Well, I imagine you got some good pointers from Dave Merrill.
I've gotten him a few volunteers, right, Dave?
Yeah, wonderful volunteers, yeah.
Well, Dave, how did you get involved with this?
It's kind of funny. The homeless idea and picture and providing homes for homeless had been on my radar for some time. One day I read in the PDN, you know, and saw the pictures of the project going on in Port Townsend there. You know, I could call Peter Bond in if I wanted to help. So that was precisely and exactly the type of thing I had been looking for, have the skills to really be helpful in that area. So it was Todd that immediately made contact with me and he says, hey, we got a lot in common, you know, come on out and see what we're doing. I did that and it was a wonderful project to get involved in. Ever since I've been involved more and more, looking at how to involve, you know, all the people that come out and want to volunteer, make good use of their time because everybody that comes out wants to be productive and they're all giving. And I want to be sure that we activate their good intentions as much as we can and make their volunteer experience all that they want it to be and really make the project go.
Working with volunteers is really important. Thanking volunteers is really important.
Yeah, talk about thankfulness. I'm thankful to, you know, have the people that provide this to be possible, the initial group, community build that, you know, I have the foresight and the guts to go out there and start this. And of course, Bayside to provide all the support that they do and let us go out and build for them. When you're out there on the build site, that's probably the word you hear most often, people thanking each other for their work. They're just that kind of people. It's a great place to work.
Dave, your background, briefly.
Until I retired in 2008, I was in construction and had a general contractor's license, but I had a crew of guys that we'd frame houses primarily for years. So building, pounding nails, that's what I did. And I still like it.
You know, when you go down San Juan Avenue and you take a look over there on the grounds of the Evangelical Church there, and you see all of these houses, how many of them are being built and where are they going to go, Judy?
We're not really disclosing the location just yet because we haven't firmed up everything with the city about that yet. But it's going to be in the city limits, not far from where we're building. There are 8 individual shelters for individual people. And we have a new model this time around of doubles, we call them, which house either a couple or a single parent with children. So there's 2 doubles. And so there's a total of 12 beds, which is what we provided for Peter's Place, was 12 shelters, 12 beds. This time it's 8 shelters, 2 doubles, 12 beds. We are pretty much done with the shelters at this point. We're just doing some final touch-up on the shelters, but we're working on the kitchen unit. And listening to Dave talk about his construction experience, he and his buddy Jerry and Michael frame things so fast that the painters can barely keep up with them.
That's where you come in, Debbie, because you have to have a list of ready people, right?
That's exactly right. We discovered early on this an app called Sign Up Genius, and it has the date and the job, like painting, construction, in our case, cleanup. Now I've even got one for cookies, Chris, because we're going to have an open house on July 31st. So we've got cookies and prep work for the event and cleanup. And people have been so responsive to all of this.
But Todd's waving his hands for cookies there. I saw that.
That's a nuance I wasn't expecting.
Now, we've got these shelters, and we know that we've placed them. And the purpose of these shelters is only part of the puzzle in dealing with homeless folks. It's an important part, especially being able to give people an address and a door they can lock behind them and a comfortable, warm place to sleep. But it's not the be-all and end-all. It's part of a whole big picture that we need to be taking a look at. So that's where Bayside Housing comes in. And Greer, give us an overview of what you're there for and what you're doing and what the challenges are in being able to actually funnel people into a small amount of dwellings.
This is like a very integral beginning piece to getting people back on their feet. It allows for some healing time, but part of the issue is that this healing time lasts longer because we can't get people into long-term housing. So that is a long-term goal that Bayside has for the community. And so being able to start with having the community that we have currently be so eager to start to help people get off the street, get out of their cars or tents is really a bright spot.
And Mike Schlexer, you are on the front line of all of this because you are the case manager out there at Peter's Place. Tell us about what you found in the whole evolution of your experience out there at the Village and what you might see for the future.
The thing that I think I have noticed the most over the time that Peter's Place began and now is the way the residents have come together as a community, how they really care about each other. They take care of each other. Little things like letting me know this person isn't going to be present when I drop off their dinner, and they'll put it in the refrigerator for that resident. All the way to we've had medical emergencies, and there's a lot of emotional support for the resident who's having the medical emergency. And that is the thing that I have noticed the most. There's definitely some bickering. I like to think about some of the early households that I was in as a younger person, but really it is very low level annoyances. And when there are real issues, the community really closes up together and defends each other and stands up for each other. And it's really a wonderful thing to see.
And Greer, what's the waiting list look like for people that actually come and seek help for having some kind of transitional shelter or permanent shelter?
I know that we have had, through the pandemic, our waiting list got incredibly long, and we have a lot of people reaching out with fears once the eviction moratorium lifts. But Mike would know those numbers better than I would.
Right. Now we have about 50 people on our waiting list. However, it's based on need. And so it is not a first come, first serve basis. If I have somebody coming in and they have a lot of kids, they're probably going to get more attention than a single person coming in. That being said, we try to have a good balance so that nobody is being discriminated against. We have single people, we have older people, we have young people, we have people with zero income, we have disabled people, we have a great spectrum of residents. Unfortunately, in Jefferson County, the major problem is lack of units for housing. Most of the Section 8 housing, which is based on 30% of income, has a 2 or 3 year waiting list. It's hundreds of people. In some cases, stop taking applications because there's over 1,000 applications for one particular housing unit. That illustrates the desperate need for units. We need low-income housing. We need Section 8 housing. We need senior housing. We need a zero-refusal shelter, because right now that's what the fairgrounds is. We need a shelter above that level, a low-refusal shelter for people who are fleeing domestic violence or runaways or whose behavior is above a zero-refusal shelter. In addition, we need transitional housing, and that's something that Bayside is zeroed in on. Our goal is to add as many units to the inventory of affordable housing as possible. And that's why we have this wonderful group of people who are so dedicated to getting people out of the mud and out of the rain and out of their tents and out of their vehicles. And as you said, Chris, into somewhere where they have some privacy, where they can lock a door and have some security, where they can sleep in a bed and be safe. And so that's what we're doing.
Part of the open house that's coming up is not only an opportunity for folks to go in and see the work that has been done, the bright colors and the framing and the painting, little houses that people are very, very curious to take a look inside of and see what's in there and how does it work and how is it designed and all the rest of that. And there's an opportunity to do that on the 31st. Judy, can you tell us a little bit about that?
We've been working on planning this event probably for the last 5 weeks or so. And there's a team of about six or seven of us that have been kicking around ideas, and it from week to week, it evolves and grows and changes. And the way it's looking right now is the open house is going to be from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday afternoon, which is right when the farmer's market closes, I think at 2 o'clock. And we're going to stay there till 5 or maybe a little bit later if people want to hang around. And we're going to have music. The event is going to be opened by the Unexpected Brass Band at 2 o'clock. We have a big tent awning that can fit a lot of people if people want to listen to the music. And we will have some light refreshments, some drinks and cookies and some fruit, mostly donated by the Port Townsend Food Co-op. Thank you, Co-op. Then in several of the shelters, there's going to be people tabling from different housing organizations. And that list is growing and still developing. But the ones that have committed so far, Ole Cap is going to be represented, and they'll be able to describe their new groundbreaking housing unit that's going to go in up at QFC for some of that affordable housing Mike's talking about. Housing Solutions Network is going to have their own shelter where they talk about all the different action teams for people that will like to get involved in creating more of our solutions that are needed for the housing crisis we're in. And there will be different people staffing that table from 2 to 5. Habitat for Humanity is going to have a table, and Amy Howard is going to be tabling that because she works for Habitat, but she's also one of our city councilors. It looks like we're going to have the community build as well, and Bayside's going to have its own shelter as well. And then I think we're going to have the Affordable Housing Task Force, which is a multi-member, 20 or 30 members. They're going to be represented, I think, by Michelle Sandoval, who's our mayor. She's on the task force, and we hope to get Greg Brotherton there and possibly Liz Coker. They can talk about what their initiatives are being. So some of these agencies and groups and organizations that have been working more or less kind of on their own, they're going to have a great opportunity at our open house to rub elbows, connect, collaborate, generate ideas. I know Peter's Place was an idea that was generated actively between Ole Cap, Habitat, the Community United Methodist Church, and Bayside, and the Community Build Project. And we would have Zoom calls like this every week while we were building Peter's Place. So I want the community to understand that the players in the housing solutions effort are talking to each other. And I just yesterday had a phone call with David Wayne Johnson from the county, who's a planner, and I hope to get him into a shelter as well, talking with people that have any questions about county housing development. So I want the public to know they can come to our open house and have cookies and fruit and listen to great music and learn about the Community Built Project, but also ask whatever questions they want to ask of the various components of housing solution guideposts, you know, the leaders of our housing solutions. Can I ask Debbie to say a little bit more about the movie part of our fundraising element?
It's called Community First, A Home for the Homeless, through Jeanette Force, who showed it during the community read. I contacted the filmmaker, Layton, unbelievably warm, wonderful, enthusiastic man. I told him what we were doing, and he was so excited. He said, you know, there's a lot of people that see the movie and say, I want to do something like that, but you guys have done it. You just went out there and did it. So he was excited about sharing the film with us. It's on community-build.org. You can click on when you see the information about the movie, Community First, A Home for the Homeless. It'll be streamed. You have to stream it on your computer or hook your computer up to your TV between July 25th to August 2nd. You can watch it anytime during that time. It is so positive and so uplifting and gives you an idea of what's possible for our unsheltered neighbors in our community. They had 20 acres they started with. They now have 60 acres in the original spot, and they have 50 acres across on the other side of Austin. A generous donor bought the film for us, so community organizations can show the film as a fundraiser. And we are eager to get that film out to people too, so they could just
contact me. And again, on communitybuild.org, community-build.org, you can do info@communitybuild if you want to get a hold of some of us.
Debbie, it's really important you brought up the idea. When folks see this film, you'll notice, and Mike and Greer, you can chime in on this, and then Todd, getting into the nuts and bolts of the infrastructure and permitting and all the rest of that. But this whole concept of this community, which is a hybrid, it's got transitional small houses, it's got RVs, it's long-term housing, it's got a whole blend of opportunities and surrounding stakeholders that are able to assist our homeless population in lots of different ways. And it's just a fascinating story about how something like this can actually evolve. We have a long way to go here. Todd, I'd like to know briefly what the challenges are. And then Dave, you can chime in too. What's on your wish list to be able to enable some of these solutions for affordable housing to actually come about?
The context of our emergency shelters, villages, is just that. There are emergency shelters and there are some latitudes. All of the government agencies are having to take on to address this new, you know, evolution, you might say, in addressing housing needs. And so emergency shelters, we're working on regulations and changing dynamics inside the infrastructure of the city to allow for villages to be able to be built safely, but not having to accommodate all the codes that are prohibitive and expensive, particularly when you think about the fact that our villages are only going to be in one particular spot for a year or two is the way it's designed. We actually have 9 months that is in the statute that we're allowed to be there. So there's just a lot of movement there, forward-thinking movement inside the city and the county agencies to allow more freely a successful effort like this to expand.
And Dave, what's your view from your particular vantage point?
Well, there's a lot of difficulties in that. I'm willing to be helpful to Todd in that area, but in pointing out what they've done other places, and we've got good models how they push the limits in Seattle, Tacoma, Puyallup, Boarding, you know, where they've done developments. And it's a necessary thing to do is to change the codes, push these limits, get a different outlook so we can do what we're doing. But other than that, I've kind of stayed out of it. You know, I'm doing the fun stuff. That's difficult. So I'm leaving that to Todd and Jesse.
We have just a few minutes left. I want Greer and Mike to chime in on what they would consider the ideal combination of transitional housing, permanent housing, affordable housing. From your two different vantage points with Bayside, what's your vision for what you would like to see happen in this county?
We're finding that the small houses are highly successful. I think it's going to be a combination of hotel rooms, like they're doing in Seattle, they're purchasing hotels. I think it's going to be safe parking spaces programs where people can live in their cars and hook up their RVs. I think it's going to be low cost RV parks that are designed for transition. The end game of the programs should be moving people into permanent housing under either in apartments or in housing units that they own. Because ultimately that's what we want to do, is put them up and out into a permanent housing solution.
Greer, what's your dream?
I agree with what Mike said on seeing the need for safe parks and places for people to park safely overnight or place campers, trailers, things of that sort. But ultimately, there's a really big need for affordable housing. You know, we can put all the transitional housing in we want, but we have to be able to filter those people out into a long-term sustainable living situation. And for the longevity of the community as well. If people are being priced out, they're being forced to move other places, then there's not a longevity of the community.
Let's talk about Pat's Place.
Pat's Place is actually named for the father of the man that owns the property. And that man approached Gary with the intention of that being earmarked for Bayside services. My vision is one more, because I'm a clinical social worker by professional background, I would like this Community Build project to really create a stronger heart for our community. I would like people to care for our most vulnerable people. I would like people to relinquish their judgment that all homeless people are drug addicts or mentally ill, and recognize that a lot of times being without homes creates drug addictions and it creates mental illness. So safety is number two on a list of common human needs under survival. So without safety, people can do and feel and act in very strange ways because safety is so important. And if people don't have safety, their lives can fall apart really quickly. So I would like our communities to recognize that the things that we're trying to do by creating safe housing, transitional safety, where these people can heal, they can reduce their sense of trauma, they can feel like they have buddies living near them that care about them and work with them, and that we are all working together to create that essence of a better housing situation for all of us, because we'll all benefit. Even if we already have our own safe housing, we'll all benefit from having a more heartful community. So that's my vision.
All of these phrases, safe haven, shelter from the storm, they weren't created lightly when writers and poets use those phrases. And I think it's really important for us to remember that if you want to be part of the solution, why not? And you have an opportunity to come and network with all of these folks that are doing good work on the 31st. Just as a parting thing, give us the details, Debbie.
2135 San Juan Avenue, 2 o'clock to 5 o'clock. And if you're going to the Jazz at Centrum, just stop by afterward. We'll wait for you. We want you to see this. We want you to be a part of this. So drive down San Juan Avenue and we'll be waiting for you.
There's going to be all sorts of people to talk to and to find out that this community has more people than you think doing good work. All right. Well, thank you so much, Debbie Steele, volunteer coordinator, Dave Merrill, construction coordinator, and Todd Armstrong, infrastructure coordinator and permitting, and Judy Alexander, volunteer and coordinator, and Rear Gates, development director at Bayside, and Mike Schlexer, in the trenches doing the good work as a case manager for Bayside Housing. Thank all of you for joining us here on Compass. This week's Compass was written and produced by Chris Bricker. The Compass airs Saturday at noon and repeats the following Monday at noon and 5 p.m. You can listen to podcasts of past Compass programs at the kptz.org website, where you can also stream live 24 hours a day. Executive producer for Compass is Steve Evans. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, this is Chris Bricker.